we have various capacities as human beings. We have the capacity to engage in the world and do things and create things, to use our critical faculties and our ability to see differences. So we had a committee meeting last weekend. Tina had diligently done a lot of work on the budget, and it's a lot of work, and then we talked about it. And so there's that kind of capacity we have as human beings to engage with the things of life and to solve problems and to look into the future and to resolve difficulties, right? So that's a kind of grasping of life in a good way, engaging with life and getting things done, trying to be productive. We also have a capacity to engage with our emotions. It's also a kind of engagement. So if the emotions are skillful, and I have a friend who's come from Boston, and they say, well, let's take a dana to the monastery. So we engage with the emotions of generosity, the emotions of compassion, and we use craft, the craft of cooking, great craft that three sisters and three brothers bring us here, and others. So we use skills, worldly skills, to create this beautiful day, this beautiful dawn, right? And that's also, it's part of our capacity to engage with things, to make things, to do things. Sometimes we engage with life from unskillful states of mind. So maybe I feel annoyed at someone and I yell at them. So I'm engaging with my emotions, and I'm engaging with that part of me which likes to problem solve, but I'm engaging unskillfully. So to solve the problem, I scream at someone. And that has other problems. Right? So that had other problems with other complexities, the problems become compounded. So part of our Buddhist life is to try to deal with this engagement of the world and the things of the world and the people of the world and our own hearts in a skillful way. So we try to be careful with our speech. If we feel angry, we try to walk away from it, etc., etc. So that we all know about. We're trying to be better people and do good things and live a good life. But there's another part of our consciousness which doesn't get so much developed. And that's the capacity to disengage. That's the capacity to not do. That's the capacity to witness. That's the capacity to not fix. That's the capacity to not try to do something in time. It's the capacity to be rather than to become. So what that is, the reason that is not done much, because it's difficult, I think. And you notice in meditation, sit down, there's nothing to do, half the room falls asleep. And the other half is probably daydreaming, so we're all there. And this is a very real situation where as soon as there is nothing to do, nothing to engage, nothing to become, nothing to fix, the mind, what does it do? It still engages. And what does it engage in? It usually engages in thought. And then that thought is maybe planning or worry or daydreaming, and so people fall asleep and or people just think a lot and so on. So actually that capacity to disengage has never really been, or has only been touched maybe. And that's really, I think, in meditation, one of the things we want to touch quite deeply is the capacity to disengage with the conditions of a thought, with the conditions of the body, to be aware. To be aware and to be available. Notice if you're meditating or you're sitting here and we start thinking or you start sleeping, like now if you're sleepy now and you're thinking, you don't know what I'm saying. So you're not available. So you're not available to anything new. You're just with the old. Yeah? You with me? Is everyone awake? Keep your eyes open? Good. Okay. So notice, like, if you're trying to listen to me, and you engage with thought, you don't know what I'm saying. If I ask you, if I give you an examination at the end of the talk, you'd be very embarrassed. I would be too, probably. So, not that I'm threatening you with anything, but this capacity to stay awake, to be available, to know what's going on, to be fresh in the moment, to experience life in a fresh way, is a wonderful capacity. It's a beautiful capacity, and it leads to the deep peace of the mind. Because when we have the skill to not grasp, right? When we have the skill to be present, to be witnessing, to be watching, and to be available, that's all. When we can sustain that for long periods of time, what happens is we notice that the conditions of thought and the body and the emotions and histories and so on, they come and go, but that deep witnessing, being available, is always there and it's profoundly peaceful. And that's the path to Nibbana. Whereas the path of engaging all the time is the path of Vinaya. So we need Vinaya. Vinaya is the way I like to talk about the worldly dharmas. Right? So if Tina doesn't do the books, we wouldn't be here next year. You know, we'd be in jail or something. Right? So, and if someone doesn't, you know, Tony and Terry didn't do the gardens, we wouldn't have gardens. So that's all necessary. That's all very, very good, right? And the way that in our bhikkhu Vinaya, in our bhikkhu life, that's defined. The Buddha leaves us the Dhamma and the Vinaya. So the Vinaya is the worldly way. It's how we live together. It's our morality. It's what the treasurer does and what the secretary does and what the senior monk does and what the senior nun does and so on and so forth. It's all of that. It's the way we live together. And it is very important. Not that if we say worldly dharmas, it's not a kind of put down. Very important to get that right. Very important. Because if you don't get that right, you just get confusion. So we see viharas, don't we, where there's bad vinaya, or we see committees where there is no cooperation and there's more ego than you can bear or whatever, right? And that's a complete mess and confusing and exhausting and so on. But the Buddha left us the Dhamma and the Vinaya, right? And what the point of the Dhamma was what? Was it just to have a nice community? No. The Vinaya was to have kind of as good a community as you can get. But what's the point of the Dhamma? The point of the Dhamma is enlightenment, freedom, peace, letting go. Right? That's the point of it. So the point of the Dhamma is not the same as the Vinaya is like a support. It creates a foundation. But what's the Dhamma about? Well, the Dhamma is about the unconditioned. It's about liberation. It's about freedom. And what is that about? Well, if I don't know what that is, let's say, the unconditioned, that's a pretty highfalutin word, the deathless, Nibbana, you know, well, it's not for me, it's only for someone else. But it's for everyone. I mean, the Buddha taught for everyone, didn't he? So, how do we discover something that we don't know? I don't know what Nibbana is about or what this deathless stuff is about. How am I going to discover that? Well, I have to be available to something new. I have to be present first of all, so I have to be watchful, and I have to be available. And if I'm thinking all the time, or I'm planning, or I'm regretting, or I'm resenting, or all of that, if my attention is always wrapped up with my own history and so on, then my attention isn't free. And I'm not available, and nothing new can be known. So there can be no insight. There can be no insight. There can be no understanding. So what we're trying to do in meditation is to stay available. And quite often, when one thinks about meditation is seen to be an attempt to hold on to an object like your nose, or the breath, or metta bhavana, and to do something all the time, right? And do my meditation. I have to do this and I have to do that, which is okay. but it's still engaged with some kind of emotional object, a thought, an idea. You're still engaged and your attention isn't free. Right? So one of the ways to meditate is actually with an attitude rather than an object. You can create an attitude of mind. You could say that attitude is an object, I suppose, but let's not go there. You can meditate with like just a suggestion, not something that you're trying to hold on to. And the suggestion in meditation is meditate with non-attachment. Don't grasp any object. Or meditate and be watchful and available for an hour. Just be watchful and available. That's really hard to do, isn't it? It's really hard. So you do it for 30 seconds. But when you pick up like, okay, if I would suggest to you that this week, make your life a continual remembering of an attitude. A continual remembering of an attitude. As a suggestion to your own mind, as a practice, be watchful and available as many hours of the day as you can, as many days of the week as you can. What happens? Well, you can do that. You can't be happy, maybe. You can't be loving all the time. You can't like your whatever all the time. So it's not about liking, it's about remembering. It's about remembering. And what can you remember? Well, you can remember. If you make that suggestion to your mind, what you'll notice is that you'll notice how you become unavailable. You get sleepy. You start thinking. You start worrying. You get wrong speech or all that. And if you make the suggestion, be available, what happens? You let go. You don't try to get rid of. You don't try to repress. You don't try to get a substitute. You let go. I'm available again. And what is availability and watchfulness? It's Ajahn Sumedho's, this is the way it is now. Not a big thing, but try to do it for 45 minutes of a meditation and try to do it for a lifetime. Right? But that is the key to meditation. The key to meditation is not controlling your mind and getting something else, because all those things that you get, they come and they go. But this attitude of stepping back and just saying, oh. So when you're observing your own, like sleepiness, okay? Many people were quite drowsy. Well, that's natural after such a great meal. Meditation is deadly. We shouldn't, it's people get sleepy after eating. So, okay. But also sleepiness becomes a habit. Because as soon as we don't grasp an object, our minds start to relax. You know, when we're not trying to do something, our mind starts to... And as soon as we start to relax, relaxation has the connotation of sleep, and we go off into dreamy states. So we kind of... We're almost... You know, it's like your mind begins to relax, and it relaxes, and you snore. Or you make... Oop! Make little noises. Right? What's going on in the mind there? What is happening there? What happened to availability? And that's how you investigate. What happened to availability? So when you notice you're sleepy, don't try to get rid of the sleepiness. Well, what does it mean to remain available? How could I do that? Right? And then you learn. How do you learn? You do it. My mother has a new hearing aid. The hearing aid is molded. You know, they did a mold for her ear, and it's actually quite tricky to get into her ear. And I noticed that first time. I said, okay, I'm going to watch how I learn to do something. How do you learn something? And I could think about the hearing aid, but in the end I just had to get it in her ear. So thinking about it, didn't get it in her ear. So I fumbled, you're right, just get it in there. and I get it in, and I don't get it in, and I do it, and now I can get it in. Now how did I learn that? I don't know. If I try to explain it to you mentally, like if I give you the hearing aid now, and I say to you, well, you do, you know, 30 degrees left, 40, you just do it. And that's how we learn. We learn in a kind of tactile way. Right? And how did you learn how to cook? Well, you cooked. You did it again and again, and now it's almost intuitive. And I, you know, I praise you to high heavens for the cooking, and you kind of think, well, it's just ordinary, I just cook. But it's not ordinary, it's wonderful. And how do you do that? You do it. And that's the way we learn. We learn by doing. We learn by doing. That's why you have to meditate a lot. To develop a good skill, I just read you need 10,000 hours. 10,000 hours. 10,000 is not that much, actually. So if you give 2 hours a day for a year, what do you got? Almost 800. I can't. 375, I can't do so. All right, so there's 800. So you do that for 10 years, that's 8,000. So 15 years, meditation, is 10,000 hours. To do a good craft, you have to do 10,000 hours. That's what they say. So if you want to be a good musician, you can be a good carpenter. I'm sure our ladies have cooked for 10,000 hours. Or more. And they cook well, right? Now I hope it doesn't take me 10,000 hours to get that hearing aid into my mother's ear, because I hope it's not so complicated. Meditation is not easy, but the rewards are great. You know, I'm always selling it this way. But do contemplate, like, can any condition, like metta itself, like compassion isn't the goal. Compassion is the method. Now, if compassion was the goal, that means you'd always have to be compassionate. Sometimes you're not, are you? So why is it the method rather than the goal? Why is it? If it was the goal, you're already there. You were compassionate today, yesterday, right? You're there. But then you're not. So that's not deathless. That's subject to change. So why is the compassion, why is it the method rather than the goal? Well, because all the things of the heart, generosity, forgiveness, receptivity, awe, wonder, compassion, kindness, love, friendliness, all those, they're all on the side of listening and being available. Whereas greed, anger, fear, they're all on the side of grasping. You know, if you look at like when you're angry at someone, and you can't forgive them. You know, the kind of resentments keep whipping around in your mind. Your mind is not available. Your attention is not available. Why? Because it's involved and engaged with a condition called Sam, Mary, or Bill, or whoever you're angry at. Right? And so the mind is wrapped up with its anger and its resentment with a condition. Now we're seeking the unconditioned. Trying to realize the unconditioned. Well, what does forgiveness do? Forgiveness, what does it do? It lets go of the condition of anger. So it's on the side of availability. When I forgive, all of us have seen this, when I forgive, all of a sudden I'm available. Because my mind is not consumed with resentment. Awe, wonder, look at those states of mind that come, you say, with nature. Maybe we call it piti in Nepali or whatever we call it, but your mind stops. And your mind doesn't. Maybe you go canoeing and you see a bear or something. Your mind stops. Your mind starts then, I guess. But you know those times when your mind does stop in nature? You're totally available, aren't you? You're just utterly available. There's no you there. There's no you making comment about whatever it is. You've gotten out of the way. You're available. Awe, wonder. Listening. Listening is interesting. Listening, like look at the capacity, like if I just say, just listen. You're available, right? Well, look for something. Look for something. You're not available because you're looking for something. Listen. And when you listen, and don't listen for anything, you come to that sense of availability and watchfulness. And that's the secret. It's just sustaining that. Doesn't matter what the sound is. Not looking for something. It's already here. It has to be if it's the Amata Dhamma, if it's timeless, if it's a kaliko, right? If it's not a matter of time, it has to be here and now. And what is always here and now is watchfulness, presence, and that's what we want to remember, not a condition. So even if you feel resentful, not that you have to forgive, but you just notice, I'm not available while I'm resentful. And then you naturally give it up because you want to be come back to availability. Now that's different than trying to just be a better person, because if you just try to be a better person, you're still caught up in the conditions. So let's say if I feel resentment, right? And I'm thinking my resentful thoughts, and then I notice it, and then I say, no, I shouldn't be so resentful. I should be more metta. I'm still not available. Because my attention is caught up with thought, with sense of self, with sense of time. It's still attachment. It's a better attachment, maybe, but it's still a sense of self. Whereas letting go, and that's the art form we're developing, you need 10,000 hours, letting go is just, it's like being available again. So even, let's say I feel upset, my mind gets consumed, and I say, what's it like? I open to it, and so my mind begins to experience more space. Consciousness is no longer trapped and caught up with some narrow perspective. It's known, and it opens, the mind opens. And that's non-attachment, non-grasping, letting go, availability, watchfulness, whatever language, and then sustaining it. So if you look at the hindrances to meditation, dullness, you know, that's I'm unavailable. Aversion, I'm unavailable. Greed, I'm unavailable. Thinking, a lot of thinking. Doubting, I'm unavailable. Because my mind is simply caught up. So to be not caught up is actually very ordinary. Very ordinary. And seeming very, and it also seems kind of bland, I suppose. If I say to you, well, just this is the way it is now, you go, yeah, okay, big deal. But notice how difficult that is to do. So it's the sustaining of that watchfulness, availability, receptivity, knowing the way things are, awareness, mindfulness, blah, 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 you know, all that language we have, right? And just trusting in that, and abiding in that, and sustaining that for long periods of time is the path to peace. And then we have both. We have the Amata Dhamma, and we have the Vinaya. So our participation in our social life comes from generosity, because generosity is on the side of listening, is on the side of receptivity, is on the side of awareness. We have responsibilities and duties, and then it's a very, very beautiful combination. So may I suggest that you try to adopt this attitude throughout the day, right? When you're cooking, or whenever, adopt this attitude of waking up all the time, and then make meditation something that is the craft of letting go and awakening. That's what it's about. So whatever, if you want to use an object in meditation and so on and so forth. But see that's the basis of freedom. It's this awakened mind, and trust in that, and cultivate that. All right, I'll leave that for your contemplation.